accession number 20938, real one.
Major Keeley, real one, where were you born, please?
I was born in Wellington, New Zealand. On the 24th of December, 1917.
Did both your mother and father come from Wellington, New Zealand?
No, they were born in India.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was principally in the Royal Navy, but devious pastimes in and out of the Navy, but generally speaking, he was Royal Navy.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Wellington?
No, I was came back to England when I was three, and my father being in the serving in the Royal Navy. And so I was then brought up and educated in England.
Whereabouts?
I was educated at St. Benedict's School or College at Ealing, West London.
Where was your home in England?
In Ealing.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
When I finished my schooling, I was 17.
So that was in 1934?
Roughly 1934, yes, correct.
What did you do on leaving school?
I had a spell as a junior clerk with, I think, Joseph Lyons, just for a very short time. And then I went to George Wimpey and Company on their construction works, and I started there as a junior clerk and an understudy, studying on apprentice civil engineering. And I stayed with George Wimpey and Company until the outbreak of war.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I heard that, in fact, in the headquarters of the Artists' Rifles in London, of which I was a member.
So this is Territorial Army?
Territorial Army. I joined the Territorial Army about, I suppose, 2 or 3 years before.
Why did you join the TA?
Oh, I was encouraged by my parents, too, really. My father particularly. And I wanted to go to Dartmouth, but they couldn't afford it. It was, in those days, it was damn expensive to go to a place like Dartmouth College. You had to go there at the age of about 13, 14. And so that's why I I then went, then it was later on I joined the Artists' Rifles, and the Artists' Rifles, when war was declared, I was automatically commissioned, as it was an officer-producing unit, and I was commissioned into the Northamptonshire Regiment.
What kind of experience did you have pre-war in Artists' Rifles?
I suppose about 3 to 4 years. In the artists, yes.
What type of things were you doing?
All infantry work, infantry. The artist rifles were light infantry, really. Mm. We marched at about 180, and when we marched with one's rifles at the trail as opposed to the slope.
Where did they meet?
In Duke's Road in London. In Euston, I think, if I remember rightly. Mm.
What did you think of the training you got with them?
It was very good, really, in its way. It's a physical fitness, but way off the mark, really, for what was eventually required. that a year or two after I left, they had changed. I mean, the whole training programs had changed completely. And I mean, people didn't take war seriously in 1939, early 40. It was all just a great joke, and everybody thought it would be over in 6 months. And it wasn't.
Did you think it would be over in 6 months?
Only what so many people said. I mean, one of my friends was the Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip as he was then, Prince Philip of Greece. And he used to say that it'll all be over in 6 months. But it wasn't.
How did you come to know of Prince Philip?
We travelled out on the same troop ship, New Radar. I was going to Aden. I was going to Bombay, rather, to join the Northamptonshire Regiment, who were in central provinces in India, in Jhansi. And he was going to Aden to join the, as a midshipman, the Repulse. And I think it was the Ramillies that he was going to join. And it just happened that I've got photographs of him with me and on the troop ship. And a famous remark that he made to me before he left, he said, "Peter, when you get back to England after this war, which will last probably more than about 6 months," he said, "get in touch with me at St. James's Palace. I'll take you out and introduce you to some of the prettiest girls in London." Well, it never happened, of course. I got back 5 years later. And he disappeared. In fact, we've never met since those days to this, really.
What kind of impression did Prince Philip make on you?
Oh, terrific, really. I was very fond of him. He was very forthright, but a tremendous company to be with. He really was. As I say, I literally was within 24 hours, I suppose, of ringing him up at St. James's Palace, and I heard the 1 o'clock news saying that Her Royal Highness Princess Margaret, Princess Elizabeth, has become engaged to Prince Philip of Greece. And I thought, oh, well, you've got out of my sphere now. And so that was that. Mm.
In what way was he forthright?
Well, he knew what was right and what was wrong, and the right way to do things, and the right way to behave. I mean, we've had a great deal of fun together, but never, never did I see or ever hear, ultimately, a very sort of loose behaviour on the part of Prince Philip. Never. No, it's great company.
What type of fun were you having?
Well, mostly on board ship. We met at Marseille in 39. On our way, I was going out to join the Northamptonshire Regiment in India, and he was going to join, I think it was the Ramillies in Aden.
Could you have any fun aboard the ship?
Oh, yes, but most of the fun was, I suppose, playing bridge or something at night. And usual sort of things like that. One may have to make one's own amusements on most of these things. And there were an awful lot of soldiers on board as well, and officers.
Did he say why he thought the war would only last 6 months?
Well, it was the general impression of all of us, really, my parents included. My father, who by that time was a retired naval officer, he was quite certain it would last more than. They honestly didn't think that England and Germany would fight a Second World War So really a matter of years after the first one.
Can you tell me about arriving in India, please?
Yes, we arrived in Bombay. There we were met by an Indian bearer, very smartly dressed, very military, with regimental colours on his headband, on his topi. Well, it wasn't his topi, it was his, I can't remember what they were called in those days, was here on the top here. And he knew who I was, and there were three of us all arriving in India at the same time in Bombay for the Northamptonshire Regiment. And he just took my stuff, and that was that. It was my first introduction to having one's own servant in India. And it was a great experience, really. They were frightfully... it didn't matter what antics one got up to. They were always ready for it, and they knew exactly how to sort you out and make sure your clothes were right and your boots were right and you looked the part if you were on guard duty or something. If you were the guard commander, you had to be properly turned out. And your short khaki shorts and all those sort of things had to be stitched to them. No, they were incredible. But your bearer did all that.
What were your first impressions of India?
Well, after coming from a country with blackouts and rationing and so on, it was an absolute heaven. And in end of 39, 40, and the whole of 40, I suppose, it was... they didn't realise there was a war on this. It was as simple as that. I'm talking now in the regiment concerned, in the Northamptonshire Regiment, and any regiment in India at the time, one just did not know or realise that Thursdays were still known as the Queen's holiday, and we didn't wear uniform or anything on that day. One played some form of sport. And that remained so until about 1941, I think it was 41, when General Sir Claude Auchinleck took over from the Middle East. And the first thing he did was he said, this business of sport and uniform until midday will cease. All soldiers, all officers will wear uniform 24 hours a day. And there will be no question of civilian clothes from now on. And that was it. But up until that time, I mean, it was ludicrous, really. One played sport from midday onwards and we weren't training for war. That was basic. That was miles out of the mind of the senior officers and people at their particular time.
Which battalion of the Northamptonshire Regiment were you to join?
The 1st Battalion.
Where were they?
Jhansi, in central provinces.
What was your journey to Jhansi like?
It was quite pleasant, quite an experience. Very hot, and the Indian trains, you never knew. I mean, there were hundreds on the roofs of these trains going through from one place to another. But we had all our own compartments and our own bearer and everything else looking after you. So it was very, very, although it may have taken 2 or 3 days on the train, it was nothing unpleasant. A bit hot and sticky, but other than that, nothing unpleasant.
What kind of reception did you get from the battalion when you got to Jhansi?
Oh, they were extremely pleased to see young officers arriving out. That's basically it. And we were quickly instigated into the rules and regulations and customs of the regiment from the point of view of dress and turnout and all that sort of thing. We had to learn that jolly quickly.
What kind of regulations stick out in your mind?
The regulations at that time, I mean, they were really quite incredible. You had to be absolutely perfect in your turnout, particularly if you were the officer in charge of the guard mounting. You had to be perfect, because the soldiers had to be perfect. Everybody had to be perfect on it. One had to inspect to make sure that the finish of your putties were exactly in line with the seam of your trousers and all that sort of thing. If it wasn't a case of just slapping them on and hoping for the best.
What kind of duties were the battalion carrying out at Jhansi?
Jhansi was principally guard duties at various places. There was a governor in the central provinces. We supply the guard at Government House. And our brigadier was Brigadier William Slim, as he was then, who finished up as Viscount Lord Slim, Field Marshal Lord Slim eventually. But he was a tremendous character, one we were very fond of.
Any memories of him?
Oh, yes. I mean, he was an exceptional man. I met him on a number of occasions after that in the war, because he commanded 14th Army and so on in the war against the Japanese. And I was eventually wounded and was back in a hospital where the army headquarters were located. I think Camilla, I think, was the name of the place. And one day the field marshal, he was a general, Sir William Slim, commanding the 14th Army in India, toured the hospital and came up to me and he said, "Hello, Kylie, how are you?" And the last time I saw him officially was some year or 2 years before, 18 months, 2 years before. And when I, as a newly arrived young officer, was helping to serve drinks and look after his guests at a party, a cocktail party in his house, an official one. When it was normally the adjutant would detail off certain junior officers to attend that particular function. And all you do is it's literally, pass the drinks around to make sure everybody, the guests would be high-ranking Indian civil service officials locally, the governor, anybody like that. So they were quite important functions. And one had to be properly dressed in mess kit and everything. One had to do that.
And what kind of duties were you personally given at Jhansi?
I was purely, my principal thing was a platoon commander in one of the rifle companies. I had my own platoon in B Company of the 1st Battalion of the Northamptonshire Regiment, as it was then.
Which platoon was that?
B Company. I can't remember the exact number. I think it would probably be 6th platoon, I would think.
What was soldiering like in Jhansi in the early years of the war?
Oh, we enjoyed it. I can't say that it had a terrific military value in those days. It hotted up a bit a year or two later. But it was good fun.
Were you called out in aid of the civil power?
I was not personally, not at that time, but that was happened a year later when we were in a place called Dinapore, near Patna, rather on the other side of India, really. And there's always were a bit hairy.
But you were called out yourself when you were at Dinapore?
At Dinapore, yes.
What
yes.
happened?
Well, just eventually rounding up the governor of Patna, chief of police, and so on, and we just supported them and rounded up these thugs who were creating trouble. And they were eventually marched away and locked up. And duly appeared before the local judge.
What were they doing?
Oh, just causing havoc, really. Just making themselves objectionable, throwing bottles and that sort of thing.
In Dinapore or Patna?
In Patna. Patna being the capital of the province in that area.
How many of them were there that who were rounded up?
Difficult to say exactly now, 20 or 30, I suppose, something like that.
And were they part of a huge crowd?
They were mostly, yes, but again, you see, once you start rounding up, you get the thing growing. And if you're not careful, a number of Indians will try to get the people away from you that you have arrested. So it was a, it had to be a sort of diplomatically posed, really.
Was it your platoon who did this work?
I can't remember whether it was my platoon or my company. I should think what the position was in those days. It's a long time ago. I honestly, I can't rightly remember. But
were you working with the police?
In support of the police, yes.
So how were these 30 or so men taken? Did you have to chase after them, or what?
Well, some had to be chased in order to be grabbed. The same as any police, even in this country. Job getting people who are causing trouble. Not much difference.
Were they causing an obstruction in any way?
Yes, so they were causing a nuisance more than possible obstruction. Not moving when they were told to move, that sort of thing, really.
How were they dressed?
In native gear.
So they didn't have any distinctive apparel?
Not really, no. I mean, they were all dressed more or less the same. Dhoti and turban, things usually on.
Were they all men or were there any women?
No, they were mostly all men in those days, yes.
Were there any injuries on either side?
Bruises mostly, but no great injuries, no.
Was there any firing?
Not that I remember at all, no. In fact, I know there wasn't.
What did your troops think of it?
Well, they rather enjoyed it, I think. Makes a change, and they feel like little soldiers, that they're doing the job they're meant to do.
Were the troops bored in India?
There was a tendency to get bored, if it was, but generally speaking, no. I think the soldiers thoroughly enjoyed India. One of the perks of the Indian the soldiers had was to wake up and find themselves shaved. They were shaved without even waking up. The chap would go round the beds and the nappy, I think he was called in the native lingo, which was the barber. But he went round in the early hours of the morning and shaved these characters while they were sound asleep.
What happened when you got the news that the Japanese had attacked in the Far East?
I was trying to think of it. Where we were when the Japs attacked. I think we were in Dinapore at the time. I'm not absolutely sure. No, just rarely. I mean, it had been anticipated. And they had, once, I think we were all sort of geared up to make quite certain that the Japanese were driven out of India. This was duly done.
What do you remember happening to you at this time?
I think shortly after that we moved as a battalion up to a place called Ranchi, and from then we did a lot of our training up there, and then we went to Ceylon as a battalion, and in fact the brigade, and I think if I'm right, the whole division went to Ceylon for the year 1941-42, where we did a year's jungle training, really. And it was very thorough jungle training.
Any memories of being in Ceylon?
Oh, I loved Ceylon. It was a lovely country, beautiful country. We were down a number of the time in Hambantota, which is right down on the bottom end of Ceylon, right on the beach. And we loved it down there. It was a lovely country. I had a young baby elephant, literally, Matsumi, walked in one night, got strayed. He stayed with us for quite a time, and then we managed to persuade him back to his family. But he was a great little chap.
And after Ceylon?
Pardon?
After Ceylon?
After Ceylon, we went from Ceylon to Ranchi, where we formed up again, and from there into the Burma campaign.
Can you tell me, take me step by step through that, please?
It's not really very, very easy. It's we went, if I remember right, yes, we went across the, I think it was the Ganges, and then up the Kohima Road to Imphal. And the whole battalion moved up that way. We were in trucks at that time, right up into Imphal. And we went on through Imphal, right through to the other side of the Kabul Valley. And this was still India, still in India, but getting towards the edge of Burma. And we then, there was a track being built by the sappers, the Bombay sappers and miners, through the jungle to the Yu River. And so that we could get our jeeps and everything else up. And they had done a lot of sterling work on this. It was marvelous, as long as it didn't rain. And then we moved down, and we had our first action against the Japanese on the banks of the Yu River, on the edge of the Yu River.
That was all. Describe what happened to you.
Well, on that, I was the leading company commander for my sins, and we made our way down the tracks that we were expected to go. We were held up at one stage by somewhat unexpected rifle fire from Japanese strong point. The past masters are building themselves into the ground and only showing themselves just above the ground. And they're always very difficult to get out until you've located them. And that held us up for a... Oh, I suppose.